Killer Keller podcast. Killer Keller official.com.
THTC, the UK's leading ethical streetwear label. Organically grown and ethically built garments from hemp, organic cotton and other sustainable materials. 2019 is their 20th anniversary year. Join me with THTC as a Killer Keller podcast sponsor celebrating music, social activism, hemp and street culture. THTC, eco-fashion redefined since 1999.
Beatbox Creative. Killer Keller. We're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller Podcast.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Killer Keller Podcast, back in effect. You should know better. If you don't know by now, get to know, sharing is caring, spread the word, hit the subscribe, hit the bell button, you're good as gold. Big shout out to Graffiti Kings inside Andy. Yeah, by the power invested in technology, we are on the line to a gentleman that I could only describe as vocally influenced by the grime scene, but he's got some next moves that definitely lean into more deeper genres of classic MC versatilities and more. Hey, Nick, what are you saying, brother? Nick Bruenhouse.
How you doing, man? Good to be here.
Yeah. We did try this before. We're not going to lie to ourselves, are we?
Little bit of deja vu going on. Nah, it's all good, man. It's all good.
Well, we did have a really great conversation last time. I feel like I know you a hell of a lot more easier talking now, so it's just a good thing.
Yeah, this just makes catching up at this point. Do you know what I mean? It's
Yeah. You probably get, well, this probably doesn't happen so much with your own parents, let alone with a podcast, right?
Trust me, man. But no, it's all good, man. I'm happy to be here. Happy to have the opportunity to do it again. Yeah, man. I'm good. Had my EP out for a couple of weeks now, which I'm really, really happy about.
Bro, that EP is fire.
Thank you, man. No, I really appreciate that.
For those of you that have not checked out Nick's new EP, I woke up
today.
See?
Yeah.
That's him telling me that. But it was sick. I mean, I've been bumping it for like since we last spoke, really. So
thank you.
And yeah, my feelings still stay the same. So we can dive straight in from there. The EP's been going good. So the feedback's been great.
Yeah, feedback's been really good. It was quite like it's one of those projects which for me is like, as obvious and as silly as it sounds, it's like I really wanted people to listen. Do you know what I mean? It's like, and it feels like from the feedback that I've got that people really have, and that feels good because I was quite vulnerable throughout the EP, and it feels good to know that that kind of pays dividends in people really connecting with what I'm talking about and what I was trying to get across. So yeah, I'm happy with the response.
Has it turned you onto the fact that your supporters or people that are discovering it and newly discovering it are translating what is a motive within your lyrics into their own narrative, or like turning it into something else that maybe you didn't realize it was?
Yeah, which is really interesting to see, because it's like someone sent me a message and they were kind of like, they were like quoting different lines I said and stuff, and how they interpreted their, what it meant to them. And it was like, it was really cool, because it's like, I think that's just the power of words, you know. They can take on new meaning for whoever like hears or reads or is kind of like interpreting them. So yeah, that's exciting. Just, and I think like I've always felt like with my favorite artists, I can connect with, but that goes beyond me having the exact same or even anything like near kind of experiences to them, because, you know, I'm connecting with emotions, I'm connecting with feelings as opposed to just straight like experiences. So it feels good to know that. Yeah,
for sure. That's what creates the tribe, right? That's the tribe effect, because when when people identify with you and what you're going through, but also can take a little bit of that with them, that's the ultimate goal, isn't it? That's like the ultimate goal.
Yeah man. Yeah, so feels super exciting. And it's just like, you know, been a bit of a drab year for just everyone, but like I think that's what I'm really happy about with like the concept of I Woke Up Today, just being, for me personally, there's so much to be grateful for. Not ignoring the challenges and difficulties that life just presents, because it's life, but choosing to kind of like switch my perspective a little bit. So, yeah.
the sentiment on a lot of the songs for me, and bear in mind again, like you come from you've adopted your sound from a grime influence.
Yeah, yeah.
So, there is a level of depth within the songs which I kind of want to steer in towards. You know, it seems to me that a lot of this suggestion comes from a level of faith, a level of self-aware, and just ever being present in how you're feeling, and the faith behind that. You are you're deep in that place, aren't you?
Yeah, man, I'm a Christian, and that kind of like affects all aspects of my view. That's not to say that I'm definitely far from a perfect human being, but I think it's like one of the whatever someone's beliefs are, and I'm not someone to try and force my beliefs on anyone, but whatever someone's beliefs are, like part of what I love about Christianity is like it's not about, you know, do good and good will happen to you. It's like do good because it's good to do good. Do you know what I mean? But there's also like, there's also this, like, there's not a promise that God will fix all my problems and I'll never have any challenges. But there is this promise that he won't leave me. And and for me, that's what I found and find in life really, really powerful. You know, like everyone experiences difficulties and challenges, and the people that really stick out to me in those times are the people that have like I've been able to rely on and I've been able to kind of journey with through difficult times. And that for me is quite reflective of like my faith and my relationship with God. It's like he's not this magical genie that like will sort everything out for me, but he's there for me. And and I think that's like one of the messages and kind of just like one of the sentiments that comes through.
Sure.
And like as much as it's faith, it's also like a journey of lack of faith. Like sometimes, you know, at the same time, because a lot of I woke up today is about just kind of battles, personal battles with like insomnia and different stuff like that. And and those times like can feel very lonely, you know, when you just feel like you're the only person awake in the whole entire world. And it's like, wait, if this God person or if this Jesus exists, like, where is he now kind of thing?
So, yeah.
I wanted to be very honest and not just be like, yeah, everything's good. And like, I wanted to be able to paint a real picture of what kind of faith and battling with and being secure in faith can look like.
For sure. For sure. And in a landscape of music where often, I mean, apart from maybe the US side of things, there was a time where a lot of artists, you know, they'd go up on the Grammys and they'd shout out God, shout out Jesus, shout out, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But as time's gone on, particularly from a UK point of view, not a lot of people within this new realm of free thinking and acceptance and socially aware people. I feel like sometimes religion, it's sidelined to your own personal agendas and endeavors. You know what I mean?
To
particularly in like grime and UK stuff. I could be completely wrong, but that's the tone I feel is set. No one really talks about religion like that, do they?
Yeah, it's interesting because like I think I always, like, I've grown up in a Christian family and it's like, you know, I've had my own journeys and made my own decisions, but it's something that has kind of like shaped my upbringing, just shaped different parts of me. And I think a lot of what I used to worry about a lot was like, I don't want people to feel like I'm preaching to them and this, that, and the rest. And I just kind of really like, I always just think, well, what is preaching? Like, because every rapper I listen to is giving me life as they view it. Do you know what I mean? So like they're given their own kind of interpretation and understanding and experience of life. And why can't I do the same? And actually, if I don't kind of discuss my faith, then that's a huge part of my life. So how can I, like, how can I just ignore it? It's like, do you know what I mean? It's just like removing a huge part of my identity. And in many ways, like, what I want to be the biggest part of my identity. So and I think I just realized like people are not idiots. Like people, listeners are not stupid. People can take what they want. And like, I have got so many friends or like so many influences that have like completely different worldviews, different understandings and just different opinions to me. And that's great. Like, I'm so glad that I'm able to be friends with people that don't agree with me on every single thing. Not that we're like always arguing, but I think it's good to, like, you know, be aware of
I agree with
stuff.
You. Do you know what I mean? 1,000%. My state of play where religion is concerned is essentially whatever it takes to get you by. I think there's a communal infrastructure in religion that it has fundamentally been like taken away from society just through public opinion of the day, you know?
Yeah.
You know, what you take from religion or you take from anything of that nature, you take the elements that suit and just be the best human being. Did you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get that. And I think churches or like religious places in general are like not the only places, but some of the few remaining places where it's like what connects people isn't necessarily whether they, I don't know, voted Leave or Remain or, do you know what I mean, support
Conservative.
Oh
my God, you're so right.
It's like, actually, we might on a personal level like disagree on all these things, but actually we believe that there's something bigger that joins us together and therefore doesn't have to divide us. And that's not to say that always worked perfectly. That's it working. You know, obviously human beings are complicated but I think that's really important. Like, just, you know, there's so much in that being able to kind of like connect on something bigger than what just about me, you know?
Yeah. Hey, listen, people better be ready for them churches, because with the YMCAs, with the pubs, with the William Hills, with the cafes, with the clubs, with the raves, with the bar, everything getting shut down, the only thing that is going to be open is the church.
Everything else,
the whole community, like, people are just like, we're all, you know, we're all just like kind of pandering to this state of play that's going on in the world, but we don't know what it's going to be like in a couple of years' time. It's going to be very, very different.
No, fully, man. Totally. Crazy. Totally.
Well, while we're on the subject, where did it come from? How did it all begin? Like, were you built from a club world? Was it from a battle place, a place of rhyming and skills?
So, enough for me, like, DJing was like the first kind of thing. So I grew up in East London. I can see that Newmark mixer poster kind of thing behind you is flipping sick, man.
Champion, baby.
Oh, come on, sick. So for me, I got like a set of record decks when I was like 11. I think my cousin was getting rid of some and my dad was like, look, they're 80 quid. We can do it. Do you know what I mean? Do you want to start it? But they were like belt drive, whatever. I think I snapped belts in like very, very quick. But it was like the early 2000s and grime was just kind of like, well, it wasn't even grime yet, but the record shops, the vinyl shops that I was going to was stocking a lot of that stuff, kind of East London area. So I was just started buying it up.
What were the record stores of the day, bro? What, around East London at the time?
So Rhythm Division in Bow. Uh-huh. There was Boogie Town Records in Walthamstow, Record Box in Ilford. There was Boo Records in Barking. You know, there was a few. But I'd only have like 7 quid a week, do you know what I mean? So I'd maybe have to buy like one vinyl was like $7.99, that kind of price. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I just really got into it because I loved rhyming and I was rhyming all the time, but I was incredibly shy. So I wasn't sharing that with anyone. And my mates were spitting. So I had just like a very simple setup in my room, like a little tape deck. Do you know what I mean? We'd record tapes. This is like 13, 14 kind of stuff. And I started kind of getting into MCing myself, like nothing particularly serious. And yeah, it was just like, kind of grew from there, got involved spitting with guys in my area. And yeah, like I just loved it. I loved it and I loved the words. I loved all of that stuff, but I never necessarily, I think I'm from quite a straight-laced family. Do you know what I mean? My dad's been working since he was 16. My dad's very musical, but like it had always been in like the hobby category. Do you know what I'm saying?
So
I think I just thought music would just be a hobby. Went to uni, did history. And started recording mixtapes when I was at uni, and it just kind of just developed from there, man. Like,
oh, that's
sick. I just feel like I've like, yeah, just tumbled to this point. But
but the lyric side of it, it feels so like what you bring to the table is so articulated. It, you know, I get the influences being of the day, totally, but it seems to me like you are definitely gone down a path of discovery, the lyrical content, it harks back to a more refined hip hop background.
Yeah. So like I had an older cousin who lived like closer, like 5 years older than me. So he was like from the late '90s, early 2000s, he was just feeding me music. So
sick.
He was feeding me like Wu-Tang Clan, Nas, Big L. They were like some of the ones that I read, kind of like that kind of gritty East Coast stuff. And I just fell in love with it, man. I fell in love with it. I particularly connected with Nas. I just loved how just how articulate he was. I loved how clean his vocals were, and just like he never, in the best way possible, he never really like his tone didn't like, there wasn't like this huge range, but it was always just so clear. And it was like every time he spoke, I can just picture what he's saying, whether it's like NY State of Mind or like whatever it is, it's just like I can picture this.
Yeah.
And I started to just love it. And there was an old school website called Original Hip Hop Lyric Archive.com, and I just go on, it was like OHHLA.com, and I'll just go on it and just read all the lyrics. And so I really, really, really got into the word side of things. That was kind of what I was listening to. And then I think like the energy of grime was very different from a lyrical perspective. I think that's why I loved Kano, and I think that's why I loved Kano from the jump, because he was like, he was incredibly lyrical. And obviously like Nas's music is a lot slower than what would be the grime tempo. So there's just more opportunity for more words because it's not so fast.
And storytelling as well.
You know, storytelling. Yeah. Like it's hard to tell a story at like 140 beats per minute. It's not impossible, but it's a little bit harder. It lends itself more to kind of like short, sharp, like that kind of effectiveness. But like Kano, Dizzy Rascal, Wiley, these artists I was just loving because it just felt so raw, so like unrefined in the best possible way.
Dangerous, fucking dangerous, like unapologetic. Yeah. I know exactly what, I just remember it. It's a feeling that I remember. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. When Nas, I felt like, or something of that generation, that ilk, I always felt like their ego didn't get in the way of the song. I know, and I know it did, but
Do
you know what I mean? It's like Nas was there to take you somewhere rather than versatility in any kind of aggressive way.
100%, man. And it's just like, and I think that's what's really like sick about like the art of just spitting in general. It's like sometimes to get the, you can lyrical miracle someone to death. Like you can really give them that stuff, which is cool. But then there's also times you just got to pull back and just say something simple, just say something like in just a different way. And I think that's where I started to connect really with the London MCs, because it was like they was obviously speaking a language that I was much more familiar with in terms of the lingo. And I think just listening to pirate radio and stuff, it was like, it's alive. Do you know what I mean? It was like something that was growing before my eyes, and you were hearing the mistakes, and you were hearing the feedback on the mic and all that stuff, which was just like, sick. Just that feeling of like,
you're right. It was real time. You were learning with it. You were kind of on its journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel that, because, you know, to their credit, I think when grime did come out for me, and I guess for you to a degree, perhaps the flow and the structure and the way it was really kind of like layman's, like by numbers, simple rhyming. But there's a counter argument for that, which is it in a very punk kind of way, putting too much into that situation, it dilutes the attack. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Even with the bass and the music, the music they were on top of, the notes and everything were eerie. They would leave you in suspense, and then the bass line, from a real primal point of view, was heavier than most, and it was just attack, 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 and the simplicity of the, do you know what I mean? It's like,
that's the thing. Heavy. Yeah, there wasn't like many on the production side of things. It didn't feel like there was many like producers that necessarily had done like their grade eight piano, do you know what I mean? But it was like, but that was the beauty of it. It was cool. I'm not necessarily like, I'm gonna use the sound of a tap like dripping. Do you know what I mean? That's gonna be the melody, you know? Yeah. And it's like, and I think it's just, yeah, it just sounded like, do you know what I mean? I look out the window now and it's just a bit of a grey day and like it's just whatever, and it was like, but grime music had a way of capturing that sort of feeling of like, not everything's like shiny and like gleaming. It's rough around the edges kind of thing.
Your stuff, particularly on the EP, there is an air of instrumental influence. I mean, you clearly work with the same producer, because to get the formula right the way you have, like that intricate, there's a relationship there, right? It feels like there certainly is a kinship that works within outside the music, because you really have to, there is this real kind of atmospheric, and you just fall right into the pocket. You got to know the producer, haven't you?
Yeah, no, fully. So I worked, exclusively pretty much with a guy called Mogul on the EP.
Hold tight,
the
first Mogul.
Yeah, Mogul's sick, man. And the first track had some co-production from an up-and-coming producer from Nottingham called Archie Stephen, who's super cool. Nice. But yeah, Mogul literally lives like 10 minutes from me. We're the same age. We only met like a few years ago, but it's kind of like, no, it's mad when it's like, we've pretty much lived a couple of miles from each other. Very similar age, very similar just kind of experiences, you know, like, and he's been producing and had done tunes for like, you know, Getz and Bizzle and all these people like back in the day kind of stuff. And it's just been cracking on his own stuff. And he got into producing a lot of film scores and stuff like that. So he's like bringing this total understanding from like a grime element, but then also he's got just this whole like cinematic kind of understanding of how to really capture and build mood and tension and that kind of stuff. And he's also an amazing piano player. So just all of that combined, it was like, I knew I wanted like beats that banged and kind of gave me the ability to kind of be skippy over them, but also like I've been was talking about at the beginning, there's like a vulnerability, there's fear, there's worry, there's hope. And like, I think he was just really, really amazing at capturing those moods in the production. So yeah, he was like totally integral to the production of the whole EP.
Do you record together?
Is that,
see, and that's, you can tell, man. You can just,
there's
something in it, you know, and all credit to everybody putting out music full stop, with the same values that are held with your stuff and others that are working within this genre that also I think is so diversifies. I think being in the same room as someone else really does add an extra layer of stepping into a world. Do you know what I mean? Like you're stepping into a world.
Yeah, 100%. And like, I'm not a producer, you know, like I can play a few like instruments to like an okay level, but I'm also very dependent on someone understanding what I'm trying to do. And sometimes it's like, you know, I'm chatting to Mogul and I'm probably just giving him a load of, like telling him a load of things. He's like, how am I supposed to interpret that? But he really sat with me, tried to understand me as a person. And we're like, we've developed a really good friendship, but just he really went above and beyond just in terms of trying to understand what I was doing, not just give me, because he's got, you know, he's a sick producer, bare sick beats on his hard drive. But I didn't take any of them because he really wanted to like, build something from scratch with me. So
it's crazy to get into the mind.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. And not like he just really loves the music, do you know what I mean? And so he was just incredibly, incredibly patient. So yeah.
And again, that's just kind of going back to the audience as well, because what you're interpreting, what it's mad, isn't it? It's like third party kind of influences. So you'll say some random stuff to him, to your producer, and you go, I want it to sound like XYZ meets da 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 da. It has to be like that. No, then the strings, you know, that commercial that we saw the other day. I want it to be like that, you know. And before you know it, it's like it's a complete hodgepodge of something that is emotive to you, and it relates to what you had as an idea. But to the bovine, to the public, they don't even hear it in the same way. It's just you guys have morphed it into this thing just through random ideas and conversations.
Yeah. No, it's crazy, man, because it's just like, and like, we listen, it's like when you listen back to some stuff and Mogo's like, I don't, like, how did we even make it? Do you know what I mean? Like, one tune, there's a track called Essentials, which is the second track on the EP. And that tune was an accident, because basically we'd made a total different song and it's got some like Rhodes quietly in the background. Well, I don't know if it's Rhodes, but it's like that kind of feel.
Yeah.
And we just recorded this track, and he'd accidentally just soloed like once that stem that, and I was like, wait, what's that? And he's like, oh, I just kind of got that tucked in the back. And I'm like, no, we need to build like a whole different song around this. And went from there and totally like, just scrap the other tune.
No way. But, you got shot the really whole cool thing?
Because that was all him, but he was just...
mad.
Yeah. We did, like that. The other tune got done and I rewrote a song called Essentials. But it was sick because it felt like he made that. Do you know what I mean? He played those chords in, but he was like, I would have never heard a song out of this. Like, but that was just... Mad. He was just so down to like collaborate and like let me go down my little rabbit holes, as it were. And you know, because there was loads of times where I was like, let's try this, let's try that, and it, you know, it's like it didn't work, but that's all part of it.
It's all part of the journey. And again, just going back to what you're saying about how the hell do these things get made, that's the insane bit. Like, actually, let's ask you that question. How do songs that you create from inception, how what's the best process for you as the MC?
I think for me, it's interesting. Like, I was trying to write a bit this morning and I haven't really... I write fairly regularly, but it's probably, for me, been quite a long time. I probably haven't written a lyric in, I don't know, a month or so. So I just sat down earlier, was trying to write and nothing came, you know? And it's like, I had, like, Moguls had sent me a beat, like, but nothing came. And...
Is that because you've released the EP and that's blossoming and doing its thing?
I think it's a little bit of that. I think it's also just I very much like respond to and react with the atmosphere around me, and you know, just sometimes like sitting in my house trying to write lyrics doesn't do it for me. But I a lot of the time what I end up doing is I write in the studio, because it's like the energy of Mogul, of what's going on, of like playing stuff. And also I think like putting a pressure on myself to deliver, like I'm in the studio, so let me, like, I don't want to waste my time, I don't want to waste Mogul's time, so let me do it. And that's often when like the best stuff comes out. And often it will be like I'll just hear a noise or like one little sound, and it's like it suddenly will just unlock. Usually it just unlocks a line in my head that I didn't know what was there. And then and then I just follow, like I say, I just follow that rabbit hole. And a lot of the time it might not lead to stuff, but that's how pretty much 99.9% of my songs have come out. So for me, I think it's the studio atmosphere that I like that sort of brings something out of me when it comes to making the music.
Yeah, because sometimes you can have too much time. But you know, when you've got to clock in and clock out and you know you don't want to waste anybody's, sometimes that pressure actually does add it incentivizes you to get the best out, right?
Yeah, totally, man.
That's an interesting side to it.
Yeah.
Who were you listening to during the creative process then? Was there anybody that you were kind of bopping and, you know, vibing to MC-wise?
Yeah. MC-wise, who was I listening to? I mean, I've actually been listening to a lot. I've listened to a lot of, like, Griselda, so, like, Benny the Butcher, West Side Gun, Conway the Machine. Like, their content is totally different to mine.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
But there's like a rawness, just like such a rawness.
There's a line in there, isn't there? It's,
really, really like, I was listening to Jay Huss's album a lot. Mm. I wouldn't say like, I'm not sure where the kind of the influence necessarily came from, but I was also listening to like a lot of R&B. I really like Sir and Masego. And yeah, but do you know what I listen to a lot? I listen to podcasts, man. So like, I listen to a lot of like not stories as in like audiobooks, but like just like, do you know Malcolm? Have you heard of Malcolm Gladwell?
No, I haven't.
Malcolm Gladwell, he's super cool, man. He's an author. Yeah, check him out. He did like an amazing interview with Gucci Mane when Gucci Mane come out of prison. Like, he's super random. He's like this Canadian writer, historian guy, but he's written some amazing books. But he has a podcast called Revisionist History, which is about looking at a bit of micro history and seeing how maybe it's been recorded and remembered wrong. So it's just about the idea of like, it's about like the idea of like retelling the story as it should have been told. Mm. And I really like that idea of like, I felt like a lot of the time when I listen to some of my old music, I'm like, I wish I could tell that story how I should have said it then. You know what I mean?
Well, so, that's a project in itself. Do you like listening to your old stuff? Do you like listening to your own stuff?
Yeah.
Do you?
Sometimes, like, I don't often find myself like thinking, "Ooh, let me get in the car and listen." Like, I don't think I listen to myself out of like leisure. If someone plays my tune, depends what tune it is, to be fair, like, I don't necessarily cringe. You know how like some people can't hear themselves, but I'm also not the type of guy that's like, "Right, I've got a 2-hour journey. Let me hit Nick Brewer on Spotify." Like, I'm not gonna be that. I'm not gonna be that guy.
Turn it down and just play it on repeat and Spotify, get those numbers and the money.
Yeah, exactly. I might do that. A little bit of extra monthly income, but I'm much more likely to listen to someone else speak, probably. Like I said, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I just love stories, and like, so I look for story in music or wherever I can find it,
because that translates it, doesn't it? That's translatable into emceeing and storytelling of your own. Yeah, I get it.
No, 100%, because I think like what I love about a story is like there's so many, it's like I often think like, why is this, say if I'm watching something, it's like, well, why is this a movie and not a documentary? Or why is this a series and not a movie? And a lot of the time it's because of like what the actual story is, in the terms of like, what's the tension in the story and what does that better suit? Does that better suit like just a 2-hour boom bang, just a like an hour and a half documentary that gives you the facts, whatever in this? But it's like, I love, it's like, did you watch The Last Dance? The Michael Jordan.
Yes, I did. Yes.
Like, because that was really cool, because I love basketball, by the way, but that was cool because it was like, you know, you can go on YouTube and type in like Michael Jordan biography, and there's probably like a lot of cool stuff you can watch. But it was like, but with that focus, or with like the anchor point being his final season with the Bulls kind of thing, and everything going around that, it's like, that's the sun that the whole story orbited around. It's like, it makes it more interesting than just like, Michael Jordan was born on this day, that, and do you get what I'm saying?
So yeah. It's like, it gives a more in-depth analysis on a particular point that we all identified with, because it was such a big moment in cultured history.
Yeah, man. I mean, just watching that, just like when you see, because like, obviously I don't remember, I wasn't born when he was drafted and when he like signed with Nike, and so I, do you know what I mean, I've just grown up in an era where like Nike is Nike, you know. It is. And it's like, whoa, so Converse was like the premier brand for basketball, and like, obviously Converse still do their thing now, but you know, to think of a time when Nike wasn't
the leader,
kind of the leader. It's like, it's just really interesting to see how, like, it's like, that's a story in itself. You know, there's just all these different things that kind of happen. So yeah, I'm just really interested in storytelling.
Did you feel like with that, that doc. Well, it was a documentary. It was like a series. I'm a big documentary fan. You know what I mean? And I like things in bite size, quick. But I get it from your point of view, because as a person of a fan of history and reference points and stuff like that, and also, you know, a good, well tied in story, I get how you'd be digging that. I get how you'd be digging that.
Yeah. Like, it's just, I think, I know what you mean in terms of, like, not everyone is going to sit down for like hours and watch something. Some people want like the bite-sized stuff. And I can be very similar with that. You know, like, there's so many times where I just want to, just give me like a 5-minute YouTube video that will explain everything to me about this thing. And that's super, like, there's definitely like a great place for that. But I love, like, I think that's what I also love about basketball. Apart from the sport, which I find incredibly entertaining, it's like all the other stories that are going on around it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whether it's like Jordan and Kobe when they're playing at the All-Star game against each other, and it's like the old guard against the new emerging star, or, you know, even to now, like, you know, LeBron, and just sort of what it means for him at this stage in his career to win his fourth title, and what role leadership has played in his career, and it's just like, or just all the drama as well. So, like, I'm here for all of it, man.
Yeah, totally. It's like, it's a whole backstory and everything, right?
Yeah,
it's like the whole backstory of it all. I know what you mean.
Yeah, no, 100%.
From a critical ear point of view, when you listen to your stuff, just going back to the whole analysis on listening back to your own stuff,
yeah.
Do you think a lot of the listenability to you being able to go back to original stuff, even this latest EP, is down to the fact that you weren't at it on your own? You know, your the collaboration with a producer or someone else as co-pilot or captain allows you to be slightly more detached from it. I would imagine so.
Yeah. I think so. I think there's a point of like, it's not just mine. This is ours. I can really appreciate what Mogul did there. I can also appreciate how that bit there just came together and we didn't even mean that, you know? I think there is a level of removal in a healthy way. And I think also I have learned from listening to myself, like, how important it is to listen in the sense of like, oh, I don't like how my voice went like that there, or I should have put more emotion in that, or, you know, just those things. There is like a critical analysis that does take place when I listen to myself, which is important for me.
Do you think we give ourselves enough time? I mean, when I listen to my shit, I'm listening with a complete critical ear. Mm. And the, you know, particularly these podcasts, you know, two a week, and I'll just throw them out cookie cut to a degree and listen back to them. I don't listen to them with the view of listening through, you know, the whole conversation. It's more picking up elements of like, oh, okay, that needs to be accentuated. That needs to be strengthened as a conversation. Okay, that intro needs to be... It's all that sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sometimes those are the bits that get missed out when you're in the moment, but you can't be too precious because you know you've got to have a cookie cutter mindset where you know where you can fight another day and do it again.
Exactly. And it's also like, you don't want to overthink things. Like, well, I don't anyway. Like,
no.
One thing, I remember like one of the first times I heard Kendrick Lamar, and it was a song called The Heart Part 2. And like, he's spitting at the end. He's spitting so much, he runs out of breath, and he's putting so much pressure into it that he starts to cough. Do you know what I mean? And it's like,
yeah, I remember
it's
that
like,
one.
Oh my gosh, like, there's not a better way to end that song, because I might have done that and thought, oh no, I've got to go again. Like, I coughed, do you know what I mean? But it's like, well, actually, for what he was trying to evoke in terms of feeling there's no better way to end it than like through a lack of breath and a cough. And that's not perfect, but it's perfect. Do you know what I mean?
That's so mad. Yeah. The confidence to let that slide as well.
Oh my gosh. Especially like, that was such an early point in his career. But, and I think that's why he's Kendrick Lamar, do you know what I mean? Because he clearly had such a well, I don't know him, but I imagine that he had such a sense of, he was sure of who he was to an extent. Yeah. And it's like,
yeah,
I'm going to trust my own instincts. Because I don't know, the producer, the engineer might have gone, yo, like, let's do that again kind of thing for Kendrick to be like, no, let's leave that. I don't know how it happened, but so it's like, it's that path of like, yes, I want to be able to listen and think, oh, I should have done that better. Or, I need to get that perfect. Mm. So like, this isn't a science. Do you know what I mean? It's not like a maths where it's like, you have to get to this final answer. It's like,
No,
there's plenty of different paths that it could take. And none of them are necessarily the wrong one.
I know what you mean. There's some imperfections that whilst, you know, you don't think too deep about it, like Kendrick probably didn't think too deep about, no, we'll leave it in, that's cool.
Mm.
But that set precedence for the whole tone in which people perceived him.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just got to be super, like, confident in knowing that.
100%.
That's crazy, isn't it? It's crazy when you think about it.
Yeah, man, it's mad. And it's just like, there's no, like, you don't, I'm not, like, a huge fan of, like, the auto-tune kind of vibe. I never was. It's just not for me personally. But I think part of what it is, it's like, even if you can't sing, like, you know what I mean? It's like being a perfect singer or being a great singer, or it's not necessarily about hitting all the notes perfectly. It's about the feeling that comes with it. And it's like, you don't need to
because then it makes you question everything. Because then it makes you, I get what you're saying, because if your integrity is to be perceived in a certain way, then you'll ultimately be critiqued for everything. If one thing is snagged, like, oh, but you're using auto-tune, so what else are you doing? I get what you mean.
Yeah. No, 100%.
Should I tell you one of my bugbears? Is I actually let's bear in mind the generation now, they grew up on T-Pain, Soulja Boy, Lil Wayne. You know, these people were using auto-tune, and that's fine. I'm kind of at peace with that, because if someone doesn't use it, if everyone doesn't use it, someone will, and they'll go up the ladder. You know, I did question Kanye West's use of it on a couple of songs, but I think on the whole, though, my biggest problem is if you're going to do something fucking live, you know what I mean? Like, none of this, like, rapping over tracks that have the, you know, the vocals already on it.
Oh, I hate that, man.
Bro.
I hate that. And I think, like, I supported Logic on tour, like, a few years back.
Awesome.
And I was just, like, I was incredibly impressed at how... He taught me a lot about just touring, just from, like, watching him, and just how seriously he took it, how he didn't miss a beat, how he warmed up his vocals. You know what I mean? Like, he really... He worked the stage. And I think as rappers, I think, like, that's it. Like, performing rap is interesting, isn't it? Because if I go and see, like, an amazing vocalist, for example, like a singer, they might not have to move from the spot, and I might just be entranced with their vocals. And like, with a rapper, it's knowing when to stand still. It's knowing when to move. But you've got to deliver the vocal. Do you know what I mean? And I don't want to hear it in the background, because it's like, it's not like necessarily the same, like, amazing experiences when you just hear like a live vocal, just an unreal live vocal in the flesh. But live rap performance really has a place. And it's like, no, you've got to work it, and you've got to make sure your voice is strong enough to carry it.
Yeah. Do you think with this lockdown right now, I know there certainly is a case with DJing, you know, music sensibility and criteria, like the things that people like as DJs to listen to, they've been throwing that in the mix. I think it's going to be very hard going back to the Karens, asking for requests on certain Cardi B songs and stuff. I would imagine a lot of them, DJs ain't going to be up for it, because they've carved their lane. They've got themselves like hardcore followings that are working to their music policy. Do you think that's changing for MCs as well? Do you think there is a feeling of, yeah, we're going to stick to our guns on what we with our integrity believe in, rather than playing up to an auto-tune or playing up to a pop attitude or playing up to whatever's current and new? Do you think there's going to be a change?
It feels that way to me. It feels like, you know, like I mentioned Griselda in the US, like Benny the Butcher, Call Me the Machine, West Side Gun. And it's like, that's that super like hard, gritty stuff. But a lot of it is like, that's not made for the radio. Do you know what I mean? And how they're doing it is they're just putting out a huge amount of music and just kind of like really giving the listeners what they want to hear. And they're making a career out of that. And it's not necessarily about getting the song that's playlisted on the radio or whatever, or getting the Post Malone feature, or do you know what I mean? Whatever it might, whatever it is at this point. And I think in the UK, I think the UK kind of rap scene has definitely come a long way. Like when I think 10 to 12 years ago, what kind of popular UK rap sounded like, a lot of people wouldn't want to listen to that now. Do you know what I mean? So, and I think it's on a journey, and I think it's going in the right steps.
Just I know what you're saying.
Authenticity.
Authentic, exactly. Mm. Yeah, when I think back to some of the Chip songs, maybe even, you know, some of those songs of the day back then, you know, post Channel U, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, I get it. Do you know what I mean? Like you're young. Do you know what I mean? There's a market for it. There's money. You don't know how things are gonna. You know, I wasn't necessarily thinking. I don't know what decisions I would have made at the time if I was in that situation. Do you know what I mean? But you just like things should, like there's growth, there's evolution and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it is. And also, yeah, like you say, you've got the evolution is within the genre and within music. You just jump on the ride and you kind of adapt and you work to what the current thing is, isn't it?
Totally. What are you listening to much at the moment? Like, what are you listening to? Anything that's like caught your ear?
Caught my ear. Corpse's husband, I think his name is Corpse's husband. Check his stuff. Corpse's. Crazy. This is like some new shit. Like, he's got some crazy voice, and just I don't know where he sprung from. He's like rap meets Marilyn Manson or something.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. It's out there. Who else am I checking? The new Buster album, man.
Yeah?
Well, I say new. We wouldn't want to, you know, this is evergreen podcasting, but the recent Buster album is fire.
I enjoyed that. I always enjoy listening to Busta rap, but because it's been a while for him, hasn't it? And it was like, you can feel like he really put this album together.
Totally. There's so much out there as well at the moment. You know, lots of things catch. There was somebody that caught my ear the other day. I forget his name now. I saw it on the Semtex top five. I love Semtex. Okay. And there's just so much. Sometimes you need somebody to be, you know, on a day where you're just like, I want something new, but man, like, it's just congested with what could we possibly choose from? It's like, it's great having someone to, like, manage that shit sometimes, isn't it?
There's so much music, man. It's overwhelming.
It's overwhelming. And a lot of it actually is based on... Yeah, actually, that's a good point to ask you, because you have gone down the route of an EP. And now when I think about what you said about the basketball documentary and... Mm. I think you consume music in a long form, don't you?
Yeah. I get really annoyed when I just hear like two or three songs from an artist that I like. I'm like, where's the project? Do you know what I mean? But a lot of people don't really listen like that now. And it's like, you know, because there's so many playlists and whatever, and, you know, there's not necessarily the same need for someone to listen to the whole album of someone. They can just pick and take the bits that they like. So
yeah, make their own playlists and shit like that.
But it's still good, you know. I just gotta let people listen to it in the ways that they want to, you know.
Bro, you know what I feel like the most newest and most secretive revolution in music is that people, because they consume music mostly in their headphones and to themselves, and they can curate and, you know, have on repeat whatever they like, is some of their most guilty pleasures, they repeat them like eight times.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, they could be running, or they could be, you know, not that I'm suggesting anything here, but you know, what I'm saying, if you really feel something, sometimes it could be like after the third time, there's got to be someone in another room going, have you had enough yet, mate?
No, 100%, man. But yeah, I think that's super true. That's super true. And like, it's just interesting, isn't it? Like, even some of the playlists that I see on like Spotify and stuff, it's like, you know, like the workout playlist and all this stuff. It's cool. Yeah. It's like, it makes perfect sense. It's just, I never really thought I listened to music like that. Like, I've never been like a workout playlist guy at the gym.
Yeah.
I will have like a revisionist history podcast on, but I know I'm probably a bit weird like that. But it is cool just to see, you know, what people go to for certain things. And I think that's a really good thing. Like, so yeah, there's loads of pros in how music is consumed these days.
Yeah, that's right. You just kind of want a little bit more return for the, you know, I feel like creating your own brand offsets anything to do with making the music, because there isn't enough money in it and people consume it through these portals that aren't, you know, it's really the quality and standards and what the focus is really is determined on these platforms that are paying out. It's crazy. Yeah,
100%, man. 100%.
But who knows? The future is yet. What's the future for you, my brother? What's the future?
The future. So, yeah, like I've got another EP that I've got coming, which is a collaboration with a really cool artist called Phil Simmons. So that will be dropping kind of early next year.
Nice.
Yeah, working on like a couple podcast ideas myself, you know, just kind of as I've been sharing loving stories and just looking at different ways to kind of like tell stories. But that's kind of in an early stage, so hopefully that will develop as it goes on. But yeah, just making music, man. I think like just being consistent and putting stuff out. I just really want to put a lot of stuff out next year and just see what happens, man.
Yeah, man, next year's going to be a whole different game.
Yeah.
How exciting.
A lot of 2020 plans got for everyone got really kind of jigged. So let's see what 2021 presents for real. Us.
But for what it's worth and everything I'm seeing from this side, brother, you're on target, you're killing it, and you've done really, really well for 2020. Smashed it.
Thank you, man. No, I really appreciate that, man. Thanks for taking the time to chat, man. I really
All day, man. Thank you so much. Killer Keller podcast, of course, striking with a vengeance, sharing is caring, sharing, share alike. We are like it was out of fashion, right? Big shout out, Nick Brewer. We out. Stay lucky, people. Peace.